ఆత్మనః ఆత్మన్యాత్మానమాధాయో జ్ఞానతృప్తా సమాహిత దీచుచార మహిమేతం జడాంధ బజిరాకీర్తి. Translation: thereafter, Prishadra gained relief from all responsibilities, became peaceful in mind, and established control over all his senses. Being unaffected by material conditions, being pleased with whatever was available by the grace of the Lord to maintain body and soul together, and being equal toward everyone, he gave full attention to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, who is the transcendental supersoul, free from material contamination. Thus Prishadra, fully satisfied in pure knowledge, always keeping his mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, achieved pure devotional service to the Lord and began traveling all over the world without affection for material activities, as if he were deaf, dumb, and blind. Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Evam Shaptastu Guruna Pratyagrina Kritanjali Adharayad Vritam Vira Udvareta Muni Priyam. When the hero Prishadra was thus cursed by his spiritual master, he accepted the curse with folded hands. Then, having controlled his senses, he took the vow of brahmacharya, which is approved by all great sages. Now let's begin by getting reoriented here, what the context of this is. We heard at the end of the 8th chapter the story of Meena Avatar, and during that discussion there was a mention that Satyavrata Muni would take birth as Vaivasvata Manu in the future. So Pariksit Maharaj, at the beginning of this, of the 9th canto, he asks about Vaivasvata Manu and his dynasty. And so that's what we're hearing about. In the first chapter, we heard about King Sujumna becomes a woman. So this Sujumna was originally born, he was the first child of Vaivasvata Manu, but he was born as a woman first, Ila. There was something, the husband, the Vaivasvata Manu wanted a son, but his wife wanted a daughter, and she convinced Vasishta to give a daughter, so instead of getting a son, he got Ila, who was born as a girl. Then later, an arrangement was made that he would be turned back into a man, so he became Sujumna. Then later he went into the forest with his army, Lord Shiva's place, and no one could go in there except the women, so then he was changed back into a woman. Then he had to live 1 month as a man, 1 month as a woman. And at the end of the chapter, he said, "To heck with it, I'm taking vanaprastha. Enough of this." It said there that the citizens weren't very happy with this arrangement. They had a queen 1 month and a king the next month. So he just took vanaprastha at the end of the chapter. So that was a previous chapter. So then this chapter, the dynasties of the sons of Manu. So we're hearing about some of the other sons. So this was the first child, Ila slash Sujumna. Then he had 10 sons. So we're going to hear something about these sons. In fact, at the end of this canto, there's a chart of the descendants of Vaivasvata Manu. So you can see how it all plays out, the descendants of the different sons. The youngest one we'll hear tomorrow, actually. The youngest one was Kavi. He didn't have any descendants because from the beginning of life, he just renounced everything. Became a Paramahamsa. But this son here, Prishadra, so now we're hearing about one of the other sons. His name is Prishadra. And we heard how he was asked by his spiritual master, Vasishta apparently, who's the family priest, to guard cows at night. Even though this is a Kshatriya dynasty, he's born as a Kshatriya, son of Vaivasvata Manu, ruling class. His spiritual master asks him to guard cows at night. So a Kshatriya has to protect, so it protects not only people, but can protect cows also. So he was doing that, and a tiger came to attack the cows, and he fought with the tiger, or he thought he was fighting with the tiger. It was so dark that he accidentally killed the cow by mistake. So Vasishtha was not very tolerant of this accident, so he cursed him that in his next life, instead of being born as a Kshatriya again, he would be born as a Shudra. So in this verse that we read today, we're hearing what his response is. This is an indication of why we hear these stories of these dynasties. Because what happens is we hear different incidents, episodes that come up in the lives of the descendants of Manu in these dynasties. And we have lessons from them. These are great spiritual lessons. Of course, also within these dynasties, we have many avatars that descend. Sometimes they're born as sons of some of the members of the dynasty, descendants of the dynasty. So in this case, we're hearing about Prashadra because there's an important spiritual lesson here. And the lesson is how to respond to the spiritual master when he maybe does something that you don't like or you might not think is fair. Prashadra might have easily thought that here. Well, I didn't really, that was a mistake. I didn't do it on purpose. When I was, I think I've mentioned this before, many of you know that I went to the Air Force Academy, so we were trained very, the first year there is really tough. You have to be extremely subservient. It's like boot camp for a full year, almost. So one of the things, you have to respect your upperclassmen. And one of the things that you're taught is, because you, a natural tendency when we want to always cover for ourselves, so we want to make excuses for things. So if you do something wrong, immediately, the first thing you come up with some excuse. So we were taught, if you're asked a why question, why did you do that? The first answer is no excuse, sir. That was how we replied. So the idea was that the person who was rebuking you, they knew you did something wrong, so just keep your mouth shut and accept it. Accept their view on things. Then if they really wanted to hear, they would say, no, now you can give me a reason. But the first response was no excuse, sir. There's no excuse for my ignorance. There's no excuse for my existence. So here we see how the disciple, how did he respond? He didn't argue with his spiritual master. Hey, wait a minute. I was just guarding the cows like you asked me to do, and what could I do? I was blind. I couldn't see. It was pitch black. And just by accident, I killed a cow. Look, I'm really sorry. That's what happened. But we see that, no, he just said, oh. Somehow he decided, well, it seems like my life as a Kshatriya in this life is not going to bring the rewards I thought it was going to bring. I'm not even going to be born as a Kshatriya in my next life. So I might as well become a Paramahamsa. Let me accept this as a sign from God. Or because when the spiritual master speaks, of course, that's the way we're supposed to see it. That God is speaking to me through my spiritual master. So he took it this way. And he, as we like to say today, he took the hand that he was dealt and he used it to the best of his advantage. So what did he do? He gave up everything. This is, and then of course in the second, the two verses that we read, we have all the different characteristics and qualities of the saintly person that he manifested. The central point here was that he just became fully absorbed in concentration on Krishna, on God. That was what he took, that's how he responded. My material life has just been ruined, it seems like. So this is a good chance for me. I'll just use this opportunity and just focus on spiritual life. Let's focus on God consciousness. To such an extreme, we see this in different examples in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that I won't have anything to do with modern society, whatever modern was back then, current society. I won't have anything to do with it. Of course, this was a tradition in Vedic times that the understanding was you need to stay away from ordinary life, materialistic life, gramya kata, everything that goes on, what people are absorbed in this material world. If you really want to make spiritual advancement, then you have to get away from that. So the traditional way to get away from it was just to leave everybody and go to the Himalayas, make an ashram there, a little cave, live in some cave in the mountains, and perform your austerities and your meditation alone. Bhagavad Gita says you go away alone someplace and you meditate. That's really the way to do it. Away from all the contaminating vibrations, contaminating atmosphere of village life or city life. But he chose a different way. Instead of going off into the mountains, he still lived in society, but he withdrew himself internally and in such a way that people would just reject him, just like Jarabharat also. He looked like a crazy person. He didn't speak, he acted like he was deaf, so no one could communicate with him. So that was how he withdrew, so he wouldn't have to bother, and he could concentrate on his spiritual activities. So this, his example, it reminded me of an example given in the Nectar of Devotion. There's a list there of what is called anubhava. Now there's actually two kinds of anubhavas. There's one kind of anubhava, literally it means what follows bhava. So it's a symptom of bhava. So we know the progression, adosha, datta, dusadu, sangha, and so on. We go all the way up, asakti, and so on. Then when you get to bhava, the stage of ecstasy, that's the next to the last stage, just before prema. So there are certain symptoms of one who reaches that stage. In fact, it's said that Bharat Maharaj himself was at that stage. So in that stage of anubhava, there are different symptoms. Now one category of those symptoms are the ecstasies themselves. Romancha, kampa, sru, taranga, bhajo. Some of these are mentioned in the second verse of the Guru Vashtakam. When the spiritual master hears the kirtan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, romancha, the hairs of his body stand on end. Kampa, he shivers. Ashru taranga, and tears flow from his eyes. This romancha, standing of the hairs, means especially bodily hairs. Just like when you get goosebumps sometimes, your hairs kind of stand up. So, kind of an extreme way. So this is one of the ecstasies. And rolling and crying and all of these things. We hear about the Ashtasattvika Vikar, it's called. Which literally means the eight kinds of transformation that take place when one is in touch with sattva, pure sattva. Ashtasattvika Vikar. So there are these. These are one category of anubhava. But then there's another one that has another category that has to do with more what one manifests in ordinary life, what one's activities are like, or what one's heart is like from another perspective. So these begin with the word chanti. That's the first one, with a K, K-S-A-N-T-I. Chantir avyarta kalatram diraktir mana shunyata asha bunda samutkanta namagana siddharuchi asaktistad gunakya nan pitistad vasate stale. So these are the nine anubhavas in this other category. So I was thinking of the first one, chanti, when I read this, because in the Nectar of Devotion, the example is given, I assume it's from Rupa Goswami, the example of chanti. Chanti means perseverance, steadfastness. It means in the face of some reversal in your life, then you persevere. You don't give up. You accept it as something positive, and you move on in your life. A reversal. I was thinking, actually, that word reversal is kind of interesting when you apply it to material life, because all of material life is a reversal, really, isn't it? It's backwards. Or you're always getting reversals one after another. There's one verse, I can't remember the whole verse, I can only remember this last line. It's Narada Muni talking to Prahlad in the womb, instructing his mother and talking to Prahlad in the womb. And it says, Amogam Bindate Palam. I forget what comes before it exactly, but it says that everybody naturally endeavors in life for happiness, especially through economic development. But Amogam Bindate Palam, they're defeated inevitably. Inevitably they are defeated. Everyone is defeated in material life. So reversal is the nature of material life. But still, if something big happens, so the example given in the Nectar Devotion is a Parikshit Maharaj. So here he is, he's the king of the world. Just imagine his position. Then all of a sudden he's cursed. He's got 7 days left. So what does he do? He doesn't just go nuts, complain or whatever. What does he do? He says, oh, I'm going to take this as a blessing. Let me take advantage of this. 7 days, I better get serious here. I got 7 days left, so no time to complain. Think about what might have been. But this is what God has sent, so let me take advantage of this. So we see this is very similar to what's going on here. My spiritual master has done this. He's acting as God's representative. I have to accept it and use it to the best of my ability. So this is the first anubhava, kshanti, perseverance. That's also, this reminds me of perseverance, you can say tolerance also, very closely related. You tolerate the situation and you move on. You don't let it destroy you. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna, you're not this body. Dehi no smin yata dehi. So Prabhupada commenting on this section of verses, the next verse is the famous tangs to tiksha svabharata. So first he says, you're not this body. Then he says, happiness and distress are going to come and you have to tolerate. So Prabhupada reveals Arjuna's mind. He's saying, Arjuna may be thinking, oh, I'm not this body. That means I'm spirit. That means everything's going to be bliss. It's going to be ecstasy. So Krishna's saying, no, don't think that. You know, happiness and distress are going to come like winter and summer are going to come. Whether you're a devotee or not, there's still going to be winter, there's still going to be summer. It's going to happen. Tongs to diksha. So you're going to have to tolerate. That's all you're going to have to do, Arjuna. There's no alternative. And then in the next line, samadukha sukam dhiram somatatvaya kalpate. In the next verse, he says, but if you tolerate and have the samadukha sukam dhiram, if you're dhira in happiness and distress, then amitatvaya kalpate, you become eligible for liberation. That's how, in one sense, you prove that you're liberated. Because happiness and distress happen, but you remain equal. You keep going and you perform your duty. Of course, Lord Brahma, he says essentially the same thing. Tate nukampam susumikshamana ubunjane vatmakritam vipakam ridvagva purbir viridan namaste jivetayo mukti pade sadayapa. So that's a very famous verse from Lord Brahma's prayers to Krishna in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto. So he says that one should accept especially the difficult things, sufferings that come as a result of your own sinful activities. Vipakam. Strengthens the paka means sin, and vipaka means bad, really. It intensifies it. So vipakam, as a result of your sins, you should think, I'm suffering because I've been a sinful person. And whatever is happening to me, that's Krishna's mercy. And he's actually giving me less than I deserve. So one who has this mentality, mukti pade sadayabha, jiveta yo mukti pade, one who lives this way, jiveta yo mukti pade sadayabha, his rightful inheritance becomes muktipad. This muktipad, I mentioned recently, this was the verse that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya didn't like. He didn't like this muktipad because he'd been a jnani after mukti. Then he became a devotee. He didn't like to hear the word mukti. So he wanted to change it to bhaktipade instead of muktipade. So then Lord Chaitanya said, no, you don't have to worry because muktipade, that's Krishna. Because mukunda, Krishna's mukunda, one meaning of mukunda means that mukti is at his lotus feet. So mukti is at his feet. So that becomes your rightful inheritance. If this is your attitude in life. So this is actually considered to be one of the symptoms of bhava. Now when Prabhupada spoke about these symptoms, he spoke of them in such a way that this is how we should be thinking. We may not be in bhava, but we should apply this same attitude in our lives. We should also persevere in the face of difficulty. I'll mention some of the other ones. The next one is avyartakalatvam, which means to use all of your time in the service of Krishna, not waste any time. Then virakti. Virakti means to be renounced. The example of this one, virakti, given is Bharat Maharaj, I was speaking about before. So what did he do? Bharat Maharaj, he had said about him, He wasn't cursed. He just was attracted to Krishna. So he gave up everything. He was also king of the world. Yudhishthira Dharasutan Suridrajam Ridhisprisha. It says he had everything, wife and family and loving citizens and kingdom. All of those things, it said Ridhisprisha, those things that touch your heart, that really grab you by the heart, that you can't generally let go of, Hridaya Granti. But it says for those things that usually capture you so deeply, Jahao Yu Vaiva Malavat. It says even in, he was a young man, in his youth, he gave those things up, Malavat, just as if they were stool. And why did he do that? Uttama Shloka Lalasa, because he had loyalty for Uttama Shloka, for Krishna. This is actually, this loyalty, this is also one of the other Anubhavas. Actually there it's called Sumutkanta. The same ideas there, that in the Nectar Devotion there's some prayer by, there's a quote from the Krishna Karnamrita by Bilvamangala Thakur about being attracted to Krishna. So this was the example of Bharat Maharaj. He was just drawn, he heard about Krishna, and he was drawn to him, and he was able to give up everything for that. So this is called Virakti. Another one of the bhavas, Anubhavas, is Ashabandha. I like this one because of the prayer that goes with it. There's the shloka, it's actually quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Sanskrit. Na prema shravanari bhakti rapi go api yogotava va vaishnava jnanam va shubha karma va kiyara ho sas jati rapyasti va hinar tarika sadake twai tatapya chejya mulasati he gopi jana valava vyatiyate ha ha madasha eva ma. So this wonderful prayer, this says that the devotee is talking about his disqualifications. Na prema, I don't have any prema. Na prema shravanadi, the prema that begins with shravana, or bhakti that begins with shravana. Prema shravanadi bhakti api yogo va vaishnava. I'm not a vaishnava. Jnanam va shubhakarma va. I don't have any jnana. I don't have any. I've never performed pious activities. He had a whole says jati, and I wasn't born in a good family. Hinartadika sadhake twayi, but you are one who is favorable to your sadhaka, really, your devotee. Hinartadika sadhaka, even though the devotee may have no good qualifications, you're favorable to him. Tatapya chejamula, hey gopi jana vallabha, oh gopi jana vallabha, vyatiyate. Haha, Madasha Yuman. But I'm convinced that you're going to deliver me. I have that hope. So this is called Ashabandha. Prabhupada calls it hope against hope. So this is the devotee. This is one of the bhavas also. Just to think this way. I'm serving Krishna. I'm trying. I have to have the hope, some faith, that even though I'm so disqualified, Krishna will take care of me. So these are symptoms of, or characteristics of consciousness, of pure consciousness that we're trying to cultivate. And so as I mentioned in the beginning, here we have an example of one devotee among many who are described in the Srimad Bhagavatam who is exhibiting one of these symptoms in his interaction with his spiritual master. So the verse again. Evam shaptas tu guru na pratyagrinat kritanjali Atharayad Vratam Vira Urvareta Muni Priyam. When the hero Prishadra was thus cursed by his spiritual master, he accepted the curse with folded hands. Then, having controlled his senses, he took the vow of Brahmacharya, which is approved by all great sages. Any questions or comments? Mahatma Prabhu?
Can you talk about, you know, the point you're making that if we don't have bhava, we should practice those symptoms? Could you talk about the other side of that? And because a lot of times we see people practice something they're not qualified to practice, and then it becomes a problem. So would any of those symptoms be within that category, or are we just talking about renouncing more than you're able to renounce, or how you equate those?
Well, an important quality for a devotee is honesty. So we have to be honest about it. It can't be artificial. You know? So how do you define artificial? If you're doing something that you may not be on that stage yet, is that artificial? I think we something we can see. I think this may be one of those things where Prabhupada says, well, you just have to use your intelligence. So sometimes we just have to know ourselves. Is this a sincere attempt that I am doing here at humility? Or am I just making a show of it? Or one of these other things? Now, as you started asking your question, I was thinking that you maybe were talking about the other, you know, imitating the other ones, rolling on the ground and all those kinds of things. Now that, of course, Prabhupada had less tolerance for. But at the same time, he would describe his disciples chanting in ecstasy. He would say it was chanting in ecstasy, experiencing bhava. Prabhupada would sometimes use that term. In fact, there's a letter he wrote one time. One devotee was serving the deities in one place and he was being transferred to another temple in India. And he wrote to Prabhupada saying, Prabhupada, this is really very difficult for me because I'm very attached to serving these deities here. And Prabhupada said, I don't remember the whole letter, but one of the lines in the letter, I think he did say that you should go and, you know, do your service in the other place. But he said, this is very nice. This is an example of bhava, what you're experiencing here, your attachment to the deity. So the Prabhupada would sometimes use these terms in this way. So, you know, we know that there's bhava and there's bhava. There's really on that platform. But even in our stage, we're feeling something, some ecstasy in our service to Krishna. So, and then there are, of course, these other things like not wasting a moment. Well, Prabhupada told us that over and over again. If you listen to the Yoga System tapes, one of the things that at one point Prabhupada makes regularly, we used to call them the Yoga System tapes years ago, I don't know what, that they were, I guess, put into the book called The Perfection of Yoga. So that's a transcription of that. Prabhupada's speaking from the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So a point he makes over and over again in there is that yoga, now people practice 15 minutes a day, but our disciples in the Krishna Consciousness Movement, they're absorbed in meditation 24 hours a day. And there are many places, letters Prabhupada would write saying 24 hours a day, you have to be absorbed in serving Krishna, hearing and chanting 24 hours a day. So this is, you could say, this is a symptom of bhava. How can we do this? Well, we aspire for that. We try not to waste any time, see that our time is valuable and should be used in the service of Krishna. So I think if we're sincerely trying to cultivate these things and pursuing it as the order of the spiritual master, we should be safe. And we have to judge ourselves, and ultimately, Krishna's the judge of how sincere we were. Yes, Lakshmi Nishri.
If I can get your perspective on this statement, it's in a purport in the Song of the Avanti Brahman. The first part of it's obvious. It says in there that by controlling body, mind, and speech, one strengthens one's tolerance. Mm. And then the second part of it is that by strengthening one's tolerance, one develops compassion. Can I get your perspective on that?
So what is the logical line of thought here? By controlling one's body, mind, and speech, one develops tolerance. Well, that's self-control, so you can see the connection there between tolerance and self-control. Just like the idea of speech, that's what the example that I gave from the Air Force Academy. So controlling the speech, you learn to be tolerant. Because when one of the things they did, they would scream at you and make you recite things from memory, see if you could work under pressure, you know. So you have to be tolerant so you can, so how you have to control your tongue. Someone says something you don't like, you control your tongue. So that's an example of tolerance. So similar, the body also, you have to tolerate, you control your body or how you react to things that happen to your body. So logically you can see how these things are connected with tolerance. Every time there's some inconvenience to my body, I can't just freak out about it. If it's hot, I still do my service. If it's cold, I still do my service, and so on. So the next one, tolerance goes to compassion. Well, that's the same thing. If people offend us, we can see that the natural response may be to defend ourselves or to react. But compassion means to see that person as Krishna's devotee. We're all brothers and sisters. We're all sons and daughters of God. We're all equal. in the eyes of God. So we have to be compassionate towards them. So tolerance is certainly involved in that. Just like devotees who are doing, meeting people in the street regularly, their tolerance is certainly a display of their compassion, because they're out there doing compassionate work, and they have to tolerate so much. You know, generally you have to approach a lot of people before you find anybody who will respond in a positive way. So you certainly have to be tolerant. So that's an example of compassion in action, you can say. They can see how there's this logical connection between these different qualities. Pushkarpa?
It was to mind that in, I think, 75, 76, I can't remember what year, but you can hear it on tapes of Prabhupada speaking in Juhu before they built the temple, of course, and they're putting off these heavy fireworks, and he's lecturing on Titikshava Karunika.
Yeah.
And he said, just see, you know, that, and boom, boom, and you can hardly even hear Prabhupada. There's so much explosion. And he's saying, we must be tolerant, or else how can we be compassionate? So, and that particular verse says that, mentions those two qualities.
Yeah, Titikshava Karunika, they go together.
If you're not tolerating it, and what to speak of, the next step is to be compassionate. But if you can't even tolerate it, what do you go out and start beating their brains in, you're obviously not too compassionate.
Look how much Prabhupada tolerated us and our, our craziness we had to deal with, because he was overflowing with compassion. So practicing that tolerance helps you to develop the mentality of being a compassionate person. You, Lukishore?
Yes, this back to the incident of the curse. Prabhupada in the prior verse is talking about Vasishtha Muni being a tamagun. Now, could you elaborate upon historically in ISKCON, we have our system of initiation, we have gurus, but Prabhupada kind of makes this statement in the prior purport that Vasishtha Muni was a family priest, quote unquote. Now, how do we understand this pastime in the sense that how can a spiritual master curse a devotee, you know, a disciple? And we've been talking about all the qualities from the disciple's side, but what about the guru's side?
Well, one thing is these pastimes, they all get complicated. But we do have examples like this where these very exalted persons, they sometimes act in eccentric, you might say. So one thing we can say is that Prabhupada doesn't spend much time on it, talking about how he wasn't very intelligent. His intelligence was not very good. That's what he says here. Well, that's what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said. So, yeah, the spiritual master has, of course, he has to uphold his end of the bargain. He has to be in line. Now, one thing about, if this brings on the question of rejecting the spiritual master, what we see here is that the disciple did not do that. And we see how the disciple, how he was rewarded for that. He got spiritual realization. So the qualities that cause one to reject the spiritual master, utpatta pratipannasya paritago vidyate. I'm forgetting the whole line. You know that verse, Pushkar, from the Mahabharata? Anyway, it says a spiritual master, if he doesn't know scripture and he deviates from the path, utpanna, then he's eligible to be rejected, basically, is what it says there. So someone who basically leaves the path of spiritual life, who doesn't actually know the scriptures, that person you can reject as a spiritual master. So I don't think we'd put Vasishtha Muni in this situation. He did something which, from our point of view, it seems very extreme. Of course, everything that happens back in these ages, it seems very extreme. Somebody gets changed from a man into a woman. Talk about extreme. So it's a little hard for us to relate sometimes about everything was very grand, you might say, back in those times. So it seems extreme, but the disciple took it in the right way, said he's still my guru, and I'm not going to reject his spiritual teachings. I'm going to put those into effect and make the best of my life. So it seems like here, rather than be, we have to be very careful, of course, and unfortunately it has come up in the history of ISKCON, where we have to balance these things, and this is a very good indication of how we have to get guidance from Krishna and other Vaishnavas and so on to determine how to act properly in situations that aren't the Vedic ideal, you might say. So that for that, we pray to Krishna and act for guidance, and we have to use our intelligence, even if it seems like someone else is not acting very intelligently. Okay, we're past time, but we'll let Madan Mohan say something before we go.
It appears he already had some qualifications that he, when he's cursed, he humbly accepted that curse. And so there's also the story of, is it the 24 gurus or the 26 gurus, when you have a particular mentality where you had mentioned how he saw this was Krishna acting through his spiritual master. He took it directly that this was Krishna. And when one has a certain mentality, can't he also see that in almost everything? I think that was the story of the 24 gurus, is there 26 gurus?
Yeah, they learn from everything that they see.
And does that kind of go along with 10-10, that tesam satatam yuktanam?
Yeah. In fact, yes, Krishna gives us intelligence, guidance in different ways. Tesham satat yuktanam. Dadami buddhi yogam tam. Nienamam upayanti te. So Krishna gives us intelligence how to come to him. So he can give us intelligence to how to react to situations in the right way, or how to get spiritual inspiration from anything that we see in this world. That's the idea in that the different gurus that are mentioned in the 11th canto. You can look at some animal in nature seeing it do something and you get a spiritual lesson from it. So this is Krishna giving intelligence, just as he gave intelligence here. Now it doesn't say here directly that he saw that it was Krishna's mercy, but I'm just inferring this from what's being given here. He took up spiritual life wholeheartedly as a result of what was happening to him. All right, so we'll have to stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.